You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, you know, the Republicans have this single-minded thing, right? It's turn Barack Obama into Jimmy Carter, only worse. Now, kind of the weird thing about the whole turn Barack Obama into Jimmy Carter thing is that Jimmy Carter was actually a pretty good president. He didn't have any wars. A lot of jobs were created on his watch. 10.3 million, specifically. The top tax rate was 70%. He created more jobs than 4 out of 5 of the last Republican presidents. And he only had 4 years. But there has been the Reagan legacy campaign. There's this nationwide effort funded by a bunch of cranky billionaires and industrialists and corporations to make sure that every young person in America thinks that Ronald Reagan was somebody like George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, because they're pictures are on, or their faces are on the dollar bill and the penny, and therefore they must be number one, right? So let's have a building in every county in the United States named after Ronald Reagan. And they've actually done this. I mean, this is, you know, if the stuff that Congress has done, they've passed 74 bills in the last session. The fewest ever. I mean, you know, even George Washington's presidency, they passed more legislation than this. And a few of those were naming post offices after Ronald Reagan. Or buildings or whatever. So it's like, you know, the Reagan legacy project continues. And a piece of it is to trash Jimmy Carter whenever they get a chance. And Jimmy Carter doesn't, you know, unlike Bill Clinton, who fights back and who loves going out in public and saying, hey, let me tell you how great I am. And he's done some really great stuff. I mean, you know, it's not like he's not deserving of it in some ways. But the point is that Jimmy Carter just doesn't, you know, he just sits back and says, okay, they need some houses built in southern Alabama, so I'll go down there and work out in the sun for the next 6 weeks building houses. Or they're holding an election in Togo, and I, you know, I'll go there and make sure that it's fair. You know, the Carter Center does really good work. The Reagan Library does propaganda. The Carter Center does work. There's a huge difference. But the result of this, because most Americans are just basically media consumers, the result of this is that, you know, most Americans think that Ronald Reagan must have had some kind of very successful presidency. Nobody points out to them that more people were convicted and sent to prison who were senior officials in the administration of Ronald Reagan than in any other presidency in the history of the United States. It was the most criminal presidency in the history of this country. That in the 20th century, the second worst stock market crash in the entire 20th century. The first was, of course, in 1929. The second worst was in 1993, I think it was. Maybe it was 92. It was during Reagan's presidency. That we hadn't had a bank failure in the United States from the time of 1935, you know, the big bank failure in 33 from 35 when Glass-Steagall was passed, until the SNL failure. That unions were growing, the middle class was growing, that we made things in America, that all this was going on until Ronald Reagan became president. That Jimmy Carter didn't declare war on anybody, but Reagan did. So there's this effort, this really serious effort on the part of Republicans. I'm a block away from the Ronald Reagan Republican headquarters building. There's this really serious effort on the part of Republicans to make sure that when Americans look back on the Obama presidency, they think that guy was even worse than Jimmy Carter, who was a pretty good president. I mean, the worst you can say about him is that inflation was really high during his presidency. And inflation was high during his presidency because when Nixon was president, we had a war that wasn't on budget in Vietnam. And the Arabs cut off the oil. The price of oil doubled, tripled, quadrupled, whatever it did. And those are the things that cause inflation. And it was the Carter administration, and it would have been his second term, had Reagan not cut a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages, it would have been his second term when that got all wrung out of the system. But in any case, how are they going to do this? How are the Republicans going to trash Obama's legacy? I mean, aside from raising questions about whether or not he's actually an American citizen, or, you know, whether or not he's a socialist, or whether he's a Muslim, or, I mean, you know, all the... that stuff is going to stick to the fringes. But you know, what about the stuff that goes down the mainstream? The mainstream is going to be his legislative accomplishments. People look back, you know, what was Reagan's signature legislative accomplishment? He tripled our national debt by spending $1 trillion on Star Wars. Now, the Republicans don't like to talk about that much because it didn't work. It was just a boondoggle. It did put some people to work, though. I mean, he spent money like crazy, and it got us out of the recession that he created when he cut taxes. So what are they doing to destroy the Obama presidency? Well, they're trying to destroy Obamacare. And there's just this amazing graphic that came out of the research. You can see it over at TPM, Talking Points Memo, the price of GOP sabotage. Obamacare sabotage in one chart, although they're reporting on it. They're not the original source. The original source is a woman by the name of Theda Skocpol, who is a professor of government sociology at Harvard and director of the Scholars Strategy Network, and there are links to that in this article. And basically what you see is that the 14 states where they said, yes, we'll take the Medicare expansion, and yes, we will create our own exchange. Those 14 states are about halfway to full enrollment. 42.9% with regard to Medicaid enrollment, and 37.2% with regard to signing up on the exchange. They're about halfway there, which is really good. I mean, you know, it's better than Romney Care was. But when you look at the Just Say No states, the 23 states who refused to expand Medicare and refused to officially cooperate on the exchanges, 1.5%. 42% full go states, Just Say No states, 1.5%. And then there's some states that are in the middle. They'll take the Medicare, but they won't do an exchange. They'll do an exchange, but they won't take the Medicare. Excuse me, they're all running between 3 and 15%. So basically, you got to do it the way that the law was written. But John Roberts in the Supreme Court said, no, you don't have to do it the way the law is written. You can do it any way you damn well please. And so in those states where there's a lot of Republicans, it gets sabotaged. And this Republican sabotage is causing us to now have two Americas with regard to health care. You got an America where the state is going, yeah, cool, we'll implement Obamacare, and people are getting covered. And you got states run by Republicans where they're saying, no, we're not, we don't want anybody to think of Barack Obama as good. And people are not getting covered.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, 1.5%, nothing to brag about. It means 98.5% of your citizens are screwed. Welcome back. Nate Sweet, producer with The Big Picture, on the line with us. Nate, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good. And tonight we're going to start out with our Big Picture Politics panel with Huey Newsom, Nate Sweet, and Tim Kavanaugh.
Good crew, sort of a standard politics panel crew for now. We'll be talking about new research that shows that 900 Americans have already paid all their Social Security taxes for the year. So that's what we're starting out with.
Well, and that was as of January 3rd.
Right.
Today
right.
is the 7th, so it's probably more you know, 2,000-3,000 by now.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, it's amazing. 9,000 people, almost 1,000 people have already paid by the second because they already reached the $117,000 maximum taxable income limit, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. So we'll be getting our panelists' thoughts on that. We'll also be talking about the deal to move forward the vote this morning to move forward the plan to extend unemployment insurance for another 3 months. We're going to ask the conservatives whether they want to, whether or not we, in exchange for extending unemployment benefits, we'll do other things to cut spending, like end all the subsidies to big oil and what have you. We'll be talking about new research that shows the Koch brothers spent $400 million. Over the last election cycle, which is actually more than every single candidate spent during the entire 2000 election, which is pretty astounding.
Not every single, but the presidential candidate.
Right, right. And then we'll also be talking about a new bill by two California state senators. They want to essentially cut the NSA off from all public resources in the state of California. It's interesting, in the wake of Edward Snowden's revelations, there have been a lot of discussions about what to do at the federal level to fight back against the NSA. But now we have some people trying to use the power of the states, the so-called laboratories of democracy, to try to do something about it. So definitely an interesting development. We'll get some thoughts on that. We'll also be talking about the conservative freakout about the polar vortex. For the first time ever, Fox News is talking about global warming, it seems. But they say that the polar vortex debunks global warming,
right.
Which is, laughable.
Yeah.
But interesting, because it shows how skewed our dialogue is.
Yeah. Well, and it also shows how they don't understand science.
Right, exactly. And then we'll also be talking about the National Review has actually endorsed legalizing marijuana, so we'll get some conservative perspective on that. It's actually legalizing it is actually a pretty libertarian idea. It always has been, but it's interesting to see it being adopted by more mainstream, quote unquote, traditional conservatives.
Yeah, well, they're getting it. I mean, it's like there's a certain point where you lick your finger, put it up in the wind, and go, "Hey, wait, it's not just blowing; it's blowing my hand off."
Right, so. And the big question though is really, whether progressives can maintain the momentum on it and promote other legalization or other drug policies like needle exchanges that are, definitely move away from the libertarian perspective and move towards more public health question. But we'll also be talking with Senator Chris Murphy. He spent the day with a homeless man. He'll be talking about some of those experiences and how they relate to the ongoing polar vortex and unemployment insurance. We'll talk about Eamon Figgleton he's a contributor to the American Conservatives about Boeing's negotiations with the state of Washington and the unions up there. And then we'll also be talking about how Republicans are sabotaging America over Obamacare.
Yeah, and they're doing a pretty good job of it.
Right, and you were just talking about that. We'll be talking more about that on the TV show tonight.
Yeah. Okay, Nate Sweet. Thank you, Nate.
Thanks, Tom.
Good to talk with you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. So this is really remarkable research showing that, Rick Perry, Rick Scott, the governors who are aggressively and actively trying to sabotage the president are actually succeeding. And the people in their own states are the ones who are going to die. It's not an exaggeration. Harvard University did an analysis. They found that people without health, because we have so many people without health insurance in the United States, some 40,000+ people a year die who would not have died if they had had health insurance. And you've got the Koch brothers running, spending money to try and talk college kids into not getting insurance, at least Obamacare insurance. And you've got the Republican Party here, state after state after state, all except 14 states. The Republicans have succeeded in sabotaging Obamacare one way or the other, either doing away with the exchanges, doing away with the Medicare expansion, or both. And what that sabotage is going to lead to is that the citizens – of Alabama and Louisiana and Florida and Mississippi and Texas and Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and you know, just the list goes on and on and on. The citizens of these, quote, red states are getting screwed. Now, they're not generally talking to citizens in other states, and the media is doing a really bad job of reporting on this. And the Republicans are putting down a bet right now on the 2014 and 2016 elections. And the bet is that if they can make Obamacare not work for enough people, and so far it's about 2/3 of the country that they're making Obamacare not work in, making it hard to sign up, or you're just plain old not eligible for things like, you know, free health insurance. If they can screw that up for enough people, that those people will not blame the Republicans, they will blame Obama. Because after all, it's called Obamacare. I mean, it's actually called the Affordable Care Act, as you and I both know. But, and this is a totally political strategy. If the goal of the Republican Party and the wealthy, by and large, white males who run it was to make sure that Americans were insured and had protection against illness or accident, they would be doing something instead of just sabotage. If the goal of the Republicans was, you know, there actually was a time in this country, 1972, there was a time in this country when the goal of the Republican Party, via its president, Richard Nixon, was to insure every American in the country. And to do it through the health insurance companies, which in most states were nonprofit organizations, but at least they were private independent organizations, so it wasn't government insurance. And Richard Nixon rolled out a program which was pretty much identical to Obamacare, except it would have been even more efficient than Obamacare, because now most of those health insurance companies are for-profit rather than not-for-profit, because the states have changed their laws in the 50 years since then. And allowed, I mean, it used to be illegal in most states in the United States to run a health insurance company on a for-profit basis, because it was just this, it's sort of thing, what, you're going to make a profit off people being sick? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you're going to run a health insurance company, if the goal of the health insurance company is to make sure that when somebody gets sick, they get their bills paid, how, you know, why would you want to put the reverse incentive of people not getting their bills paid, but the company making a profit? Why, that makes no sense. So when Nixon rolled this out in 72, it would have been actually better than Obamacare. And you can go back and watch the old, there's a great YouTube of it floating around there. It's like about a 4-minute report by CBS News that compares the Nixon program with Ted Kennedy's basically single payer program. And the guy who fought Nixon and blocked Nixon's program in the Senate, it wasn't the Republicans. Excuse me. It wasn't the right wingers. It wasn't the billionaires. It was Ted Kennedy. He made, and I think, you know, I don't know Ted Kennedy. I didn't know Ted Kennedy personally, but from everything I've been able to read and learn and talk to people who knew him, this is one of the regrets that he took to his grave, was that Ted Kennedy had made the good the enemy of the perfect, or the perfect the enemy of the good. That he had said, you know, Nixon care wasn't good enough, and so he was going to block it in the hopes that something better, universal health care, single-payer universal health care, Medicare for all, could pass. Now, keep in mind, this was before Medicare even existed. Medicare didn't come along until the 1960s. So this was after Medicare existed. This was in the decade after Medicare. So Kennedy wanted to expand Medicare to include everybody, basically. And Nixon was saying, we'll do this thing where everybody has to sign up with the health insurance companies. We'll provide some subsidies. So here we have Republicans who at one time actually did want everyone to have insurance. Now saying, no, let's screw people. Let's hurt people. Let's have people die so that they or their relatives, their survivors, will blame Obama.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And their big hope is that you're not paying attention. That's what the whole thing depends on. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 28 minutes before the hour. And Jeff in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
What I'm kind of sick of, I am a conservative, but I'm just so sick of the Republicans going down the path they've been going down for a long time. The unemployment insurance, I know, in the past I've been unemployed before, and I've got some of that insurance, and sometimes, back then when I was a lot lower income, that paid my water bill, it paid my heating bill, and it paid for groceries to feed my kids.
Yep.
And I know it's a small amount. I mean, sometimes, it's like maybe $200 a week. But for the Republicans to just poke in the eye of a couple hundred,
1.3 million.
To Americans, right, to poke them in the eye and say, well, we're not going to pass it unless, we get some further reduction in spending.
And they won't take, by the way, a reduction in spending that's, hey, let's do something about the $3 billion that we're giving to the oil companies every year, right? Let's do something about the billions of dollars that we're giving to the coal companies. Let's do something about the hundreds of billions of dollars that we're giving to defense contractors. There are places where I would agree with cutting spending, but the Republicans won't go to any of those places. Or let's just close some tax loopholes on companies that ship jobs overseas. Won't go there.
Right. I'm in agreement with you because, this is not a conservative idea to, put people so they can't, pay for their water bill or their heating bill or something like that.
Right.
And it's just, I can't stomach, especially a lot of the, the Hannitys and stuff anymore. I can't stomach the rhetoric that they spew out of the radio. It's very hard for me to. It's not conservative. I'll tell you that.
Well, I don't want to pick on one of my colleagues, but Sean Hannity isn't here to defend himself, and frankly,
right.
I haven't listened to his show in years. So,
I realize that. What I'm saying is that. I think it looks like some of the Republicans, conservatives are, it passed in the Senate, and so I think.
Well, it didn't pass.
Coming around.
It hasn't passed. What passed, Jeff, was they allowed the bill to come to the floor for debate and amendment.
Right.
And so it didn't, the filibuster of the debate was, was beat with 60 votes. But, they can still stop this thing. They can still filibuster the vote itself. The call to close debate, what's called cloture. They can filibuster that. And if they don't get what they want, if they don't get their pound of flesh, they're threatening to do that. And they probably won't get 60 votes for that.
Yeah, and what you were talking about on the health insurance, I did get a quote. I live in Arizona, of course. I don't think we participate in the exchange. I'm not.
You
I'm
don't participate in the exchange, but Jan Brewer made sure that you did participate in the Medicaid expansion.
Right, and I called for a quote on the exchange the other day, and just for my wife and I, it's going to cost me with a $3,600 deductible, $35 copays, it's going to cost me $1,200 a month. I can't afford that.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And there was no...
I make good money. So.
Yeah, so there was no subsidy available to you because you make good money.
Well, I am now. Last part of the year, I'm self-employed.
Yeah.
And so going into this year, I'll be completely self-employed. So, yeah, I'm going to probably, unfortunately, be looking at some...
Well, this year you might qualify for some pretty good subsidies then. I mean, it's the upside of making less money, I guess. But in any case, is the net of what you're saying that you're tired of all these political games and let's just get something done?
Oh, yeah. It's so sickening. It's hard for me to listen. We don't agree on a lot of things, but I could say that, all the years I've listened to you, I do appreciate a lot of the things that you've said over the years, and I think you're somewhat level-headed on a lot of things. So I do appreciate that. And
Thank you, Jeff.
Appreciate your show.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your kind comments. And even as a conservative, I want to play a clip for you. It starts out with Walter Cronkite setting it up, and then he tosses it to a package that Daniel Schorr did. And I had lunch with Daniel Schorr many years ago before he died, one of the great high points of my life. I never met Walter Cronkite. But I want to play the first 20 seconds or so, which is Walter Cronkite setting it up. And then we're going to jump to the 1 minute 41 seconds point in it. You can just kind of drag the bar across, Jim. And where Daniel Schorr starts comparing the plans between Nixon and Kennedy. And the part in between that we're going to cut out is Nixon giving a speech about how wonderful his plan is and Kennedy giving a speech about how wonderful his plan is, in part because I just don't want to, wholesale borrow from CBS News also. But here's the setup. Here is Walter Cronkite.
President Nixon today pledged his administration to a new national health plan that would benefit not only patients but also doctors and citizens who enjoy good health. But beating him to the punch, Senator Edward Kennedy earlier proposed an alternate plan that goes much further than the administration. Daniel Schorr offers a comparison of these two health plans.
Okay, here we get into this comparison.
Be the year
you just pause that right there, and Schorr sort of explains it, and then you hear Nixon give his little shtick on it, and you hear Kennedy give his shtick on it. And then if you go to 141 in the clip there, Jim, tell me when you're ready. Okay, play it. Here's Daniel Schorr.
The administration proposal would provide different plans for four categories of Americans.
This is the Nixon administration.
For 150 million working people and their families, employers would be required to buy health insurance, providing a basic package of benefits, eventually they paying three-quarters of the premiums. For some 20 million of the working poor and their families, the current free Medicaid services would be replaced by private health insurance, fully paid by the government for the poorest, with a sliding scale of contributions for families earning more than $3,000. For the 21 million aging Americans, the $5.60 monthly Medicare premium for optional doctor services would be dropped, Social Security taxes adjusted to make up the cost. For some 30 million domestic, self-employed, and others, lower cost by being enabled to buy policies at group rates from insurance pools.
Pause it right there. Now, but we're going to go right back to that spot, so pause it right there, Jim. What he just laid out was Obamacare. Did you get it? Right? Your employer has to buy your insurance. If your employer doesn't buy your insurance, then you can buy it on an exchange, basically, a national exchange. And if you're low income, the government will pay for it. And if you qualify for Medicare, the one thing that he was going to do was do away with Medicare and replace it with private insurance paid for by the government, which is functionally the same thing. It's a little less efficient. And then for Medicare, for people over 65, we're going to do away with the cost of that altogether and just throw in a freebie. In some ways, it's better than Obamacare. Then he gets to Kennedy's plan.
deductions, co-insurance features. The plan is estimated to cover less than half of the average patient's health expenses and to cost the federal government less than $2 billion in addition to what it's now paid.
This is the Nixon plan.
By contrast, the Kennedy plan would cover an estimated 70% of health expenses through a system that would cost the government up to $60 billion, but including a lot of what patients are now paying. The Kennedy bill is straight national health insurance, financed by Social Security and general taxes, with no cost sharing, no cutoff point for the beneficiaries, bypassing private insurance companies operating through a presidentially appointed health security board. And so the line is being drawn between repairs on the present health system and a new federal health system.
There you go. So Nixon proposes Obamacare. Kennedy says, no, I want single payer. Kennedy won and he blocked Nixon. And this was 72. This was 1972. It's pretty amazing. This was posted by CBS News Online, although I don't know if it's actually them. And this was back. I'm sorry. This was 71, 70, 71. CBS News. So, anyhow, Stephen in Salem, Ohio. Stephen, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
Oh, okay. I'll be real quick. Well, if they ever look at the latitude of London, it's pretty far north up there. Yet they don't have frigid Arctic temperatures. Now, like if they get more a little bit more warming and the Greenland ice shelf thaws out, they'll stop that Gulf current.
Right, the
and
Gulf
then
stream.
They'll have some real serious weather in London and north in America.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of funny when you listen to these people, you don't realize that they think warming should be warm all the time around, but they don't realize that.
Well, here's a simple way of explaining what's happening. The Gulf Stream is like a barrier. It's like a wall. It's this current of air that flows around the northern part of the hemisphere, and the northern hemisphere, and the jet stream, and getting to the air, and it acts like a barrier, keeping that cold air bottled up in the north. Global warming has weakened it, so the cold air is now oozing down.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Global warming is basically melting the jet stream, and the jet stream is kind of wandering south in its drunken way and bringing with it all this cold air. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour, and here we go. Jim in Denver. Hey, Jim. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up? Jim? Jim, can you hear me? Okay. John in Sebring, Florida, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, John, what's up?
Oh, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
One of the problems that happened at Fukushima, and it's also in all the ones in the United States that are the same model. There's like over 40 of them.
Right.
They're not self-sustaining. The
You're
power
correct.
That is generated by the reactor needs to be wired into the cooling pumps so that they can be self-sustaining. They
right.
are not.
But the reason that they don't do that is because if anything goes wrong with the reactor, they want those cooling pumps to still run. And so basically what they're assuming is that the grid is going to be more reliable than the reactor. Which is a pretty scary assumption.
That's the fatal flaw, because if there's a big burst from the sun, we get a Carrington event, or if we get an EMP attack from Korea or Russia or China, now we got no cooling.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
And 8 hours, 12 hours of battery and 2 days of diesel, and then you've got to have a truck coming every 2 days. More diesel, more diesel,
right.
more diesel, more diesel.
Right.
Just wire the things in, make themselves sustaining.
Yeah. In theory, I don't disagree. I think probably a better solution is just to replace nuclear power with something that, like wind or solar. Spain just hit, the wind is now their major source of electrical power in Spain. We could do that. James in Silverton, Oregon. Hey, James, what's up?
Take off speakerphone.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Harbin, I'm on SSDI. I'm on Medicare like my mom. When you're on disability, and I've been on SSDI since 2002, and I'm a mental health patient. I moved here to Oregon 2 years ago. When I went to try to eat the private docs, psychiatrists, they said they didn't want me because of Medicare. I tried Marion County Mental Health, and they refused to see me. And I went to nonprofits. They refused to see me because I'm a Medicare. They only would take Oregon Medicaid patients. I was so desperate that I contacted the state teaching hospital in Portland, and they said they wouldn't take me, so they referred me to LifeWorks in Metro Portland. So I've been, for the past, I'll be going on 2 years this fall. I go to Beaverton for my mental health treatment.
Wow.
Along with a doc and a therapist.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. You're identifying one of the big holes in our healthcare system, James, and that is mental health. Our mental health care is very uneven across the country. It's spotty. There are huge holes in it. There are places where it's not covered. There are policies that don't insure it. It's not well funded. Obamacare tries to fix that. It requires all insurance policies, for example, to cover mental health. And I think it's going to be a good thing. But, you know, I'm sorry to hear your story. I hope it's working better for you. One thing you might want to do is contact your member of the House of Representatives in Silverton. I'm not sure who it is. It might be Peter DeFazio. It might be Earl Blumenauer. But anyhow, contact your member of the House of Representatives. Talk to their person in what's called constituent services and ask if they can help you out. That's what they do for a living. So, James, thanks a lot for the call. John Marvin here with you. Joe in Chino, California. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi. He had a caller yesterday that asserted that the increased rainfall was going to release heat that would escape space.
I know. He was wrong.
And, well, he's right that that phase change from gas to liquid releases heat.
Yeah. Isn't it something like 500 calories per gram of water or something? That's my record.
I know it in joules, but, you know, that's irrelevant.
Yeah, but I think, in any case.
But what he's ignoring is that that carbon dioxide and even water vapor makes the atmosphere opaque to infrared.
Right.
So it won't escape.
Right. Right.
And I've never, you know, I've been a Scientific American subscriber for 35 years. I taught science, physics, and chemistry for 25. I've never read or heard of anything that he asserted.
Well, that's why I was saying it's not going to, you know, you're not going to increase radiation into space, you know, when you have just phase changes in you know, gas to liquid, liquid to solid for that matter, you know, ice melting.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to affect radiation into space unless you're affecting albedo effect, unless you're decreasing cloud cover, for example. Then you might have a little more radiation in the space. But on the other hand, you're also going to have more reflection to begin with. You know, during the day, you'll have more radiation at night. And I don't know how that balances out. But the net is that right now we have 5% more water vapor in our atmosphere than we did 30 years ago. And water vapor is a greenhouse gas as well. And that's adding to CO2. And then on top of that, you got methane. You got all these methane leaks happening all over the world. And, you know, with fracking and what, and then the natural methane, the thawing of the tundra and things like that. And Well, thanks for correcting that, Joe. I appreciate the call. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think the most significant thing that has happened politically in many years is this election in Seattle and the swearing in yesterday of Sharma Aswant, I think her last name
the
is.
The socialist?
Yeah, it's part of the Socialist Alternative Party, and it's a growing party apparently. And actually, they ran somebody here for the city council in Minneapolis, and the person nearly won. She only won by, I think, like it was 50.2%, and this person lost by about 128 votes. So I hope that this is a growing movement, because I think that we would already have socialized medicine or health care, you know, national health care or single payer, whatever you want to call it. We would have that if we had a reliable left-wing party. But the Democratic Party is in bed with, I'm sorry to say, and I am a progressive, I vote Democrat, but I think I'm going to be moving out, you know, into maybe, you know, these other alternative parties because I'm really tired of being used. I feel like I've been used, I don't know how many times, by Democrats to get them elected, and then after they're elected, they leave, you know, I earn a wage. I'm a technical person, but still I earn a wage. I make a good salary. But, you know, all middle class people are suffering under this. And we are essentially out of the picture when it comes to national politics. And we can't get back in until, you know, there's
this
many
is, let's be clear, John,
we
that this is. This is not true of all Democrats. You get some really great Democrats in the Progressive Caucus, in the Democratic Party. But you're right. There are a lot of conservative Dems. There are a lot of corporate Dems.
In this case, in Minneapolis, they supported the other candidate. They did not support this person who got SEIU support. And that really made me mad. And I think that if you're part of the progressive caucus, you ought to support progressive politics wherever it sprouts up because it's really rare here in this country. And you know, I was really appalled about that. I didn't like that at all. And I just wanted to say that, I really hope for the best for this country, but I think we need another party. I really do, with another set of values because they're too corrupt.
What happens when other parties spring up, you know, outside of the normal speech about how, you know, the party that springs up always hurts the party closest to it? The other thing that happens is that it tends to change the party closest to it. And so the Tea Party, for example, has made the Republican Party far more conservative. If a socialist party of any kind of viability or a Green Party of any kind of viability were to appear in the United States, it would move the Democratic Party to the left. And that would be, I think, a good thing for the Democratic Party. Over the short term, though, it might cause them to lose elections like the Tea Party is causing the Republicans to. And that might be a bad thing. And so you can, you know, you can debate this either way. But I think that if the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, I mean, you don't have to go to the Socialist Party. You can just go to FDR's policies and have probably 60-70% of what you're going to find in the socialist platform. And what most Americans agree with, you know, the government is the employer of last resort, you know, those kinds of
things. You know, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Yeah. You know, during FDR's, you know, election and whatnot, we had the communists, we had the socialists, you know, we had people like Eugene Debs.
Yep.
You know, these were pushing the Democratic Party in the other direction.
That's my point.
Yeah, and I think...
And you also had a fascist party, by the way, pushing Republicans.
I'm not going to devote my time to the Democratic Party when they continually abuse me. Mm. I feel like I'm being abused by them. And maybe...
There's a middle ground here, John, and this is what Progressive Democrats of America have been doing so brilliantly is the inside-outside strategy, which is you be an outside organization and you push for really progressive stuff and you push really hard. And when you have progressive politicians, you embrace them and you do everything you can to get them elected to help them. And when you have Democrats who are not progressive politicians, you petition them, you hassle them, you show up at their offices. And you know, it's not that you try to get them voted out of office, but you try to push them to the left. And they're succeeding in doing this. And I think that does the same thing.
We need an organized labor party, not a Democratic Party.
We need an organized labor movement.
Democratic Party. We need another party.
Yeah. Well, good luck on that. And I don't mean that totally sarcastically, but it's like every single time we've had a third party in the United States, going back to the founding of this republic, it has ended up shooting in the foot itself, basically, and the party closest to it. But an organized movement can push a party. That, I'm with you. Especially, hang on just a second. Oh,
you're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. Solar World has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at solarworld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
So, Chris Murphy of Connecticut. Senator, this is an extraordinary story. You were on break, and you met with a homeless fellow and spent a day with him. Can you tell us how that came about, what provoked doing that, and then I'd like to get into the details of what you learned from it.
Yeah, we've had some really disturbing trend lines in Connecticut. Homelessness has been increasing as our technical unemployment rate has been going down. And in a high-cost state, it's not a surprise. Housing just costs a lot more, and so somebody that's been on a flat income for 10 years eventually can't continue to pay their mortgage and their rent in addition to all the other inflationary increases in the cost of living. And so we just have more people out in the street than we had last year. In New Haven, where I was, we had about 750 homeless this year, and we had 650 last year. And that's not the story that people think is happening in our economy today. So, there's only so much you can learn about what it's like to be homeless when you're, reading briefing papers or sitting around a conference table. And so I called up the local homeless shelter, and I said, can you find a guy who'd be willing to just spend the day with me to, show me what it's like to walk out of the homeless shelter at 7:30 in the morning and try to stay warm for the entirety of the day in the middle of December. And I did that. I used a pseudonym for the guy that I went with. I used the name Nick. But it's a pretty dehumanizing existence just to do it for a day. When your entire life is built around staying warm and trying to apply for jobs when your address is a homeless shelter, I wouldn't have wanted to do it for more than the 10 or 12 hours that I did it, but it certainly brings me a newfound sense of mission to try to get these guys off the street.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that one of Nick's biggest challenges, he had had a job for many years. He didn't have a job now. One of his biggest challenges in trying to get a job was that he didn't have a permanent address.
Yeah, I mean, this is Nick is an example of the new homeless in the sense that he's 40 years old and he's never been homeless in his life. He's made some bad personal decisions in his life, but a lot of us have. But he's always been employed. He lost his job over the course of the spring, couldn't find another one, ran through his savings, ran through the good graces of his girlfriend and his relatives, and was out on the street for the first time in his life. And he's got skills. He's got a work history. But when you don't have a car and when you have to list your address as the Columbus House Homeless Shelter, and when there's a long list of other applicants who have cars and who have homes, you are not first on the list to get an interview. And he's just in a real tough space because he tells me he's in a catch-22. He can't get a job if he doesn't have a home, and he can't get a home unless he has a job. And he wonders how on earth he's ever going to get out of this cycle that he's found himself in 40 years into his life. It's not an easy place to be, and it just is a reminder as to why our policy should be to prevent homelessness, that we should do everything possible to stop somebody from getting into that position. And we're certainly not living up to that right now.
Well, which raises two questions. A, how does this happen in the richest nation on earth? And how do we get out of this?
Yeah, I mean, it happens because, we have an economy that's recovering only for a small percentage. That the reality is that folks have been, hanging on for a long time in jobs that don't pay what they used to, with hours that are greatly declined. Frankly, Tom, a lot of the people that are at this homeless shelter are actually working. You know, they just can't continue to work only 20 hours a week and pay rent in Connecticut. But for this guy, you know, how do we allow this to happen? Well, part of it is that we cut off people's unemployment benefits, and that that lifeline allows them to continue to stay housed, continue to pay their bills while they're unemployed, which allows them to look for work. And by cutting off people's unemployment benefits, as we are threatening to do, as we have done and are threatening to continue to do, it basically just guarantees that another several thousand people across Connecticut and the Northeast will find themselves out in the street and will get in that cycle of never being able to find another job.
They get thrown into that, that catch-22 loop that Nick found himself in.
Yeah, and Nick and his friends, I mean, you know, they look at the fact that there are folks that are living very well in Connecticut. I mean, Connecticut has the, you know, biggest disparity between rich and poor in the entire nation. We've got folks living in Fairfield County who are pulling in huge incomes, who are paying record low tax rates. And then just down the street in places like Bridgeport and New Haven, you've got entire communities of hundreds of young men and women living out on the streets. There's just a fundamental unfairness in our economy right now that has to be corrected some way or another, or our entire economy will ultimately collapse because we have nobody left to buy the things that the top 1, 2, 3, 4% of Americans are producing.
Yeah, it seems. Franklin Roosevelt made the comment that the best welfare program is a job, and he said, you know, when capitalism fails, when it has its periodic hiccups, and capitalism goes through those cycles where it does, that it was the obligation of government to step in and provide people with jobs if the system wasn't, if the economy as a whole wasn't. We maintained that for quite a while. I mean, Eisenhower with the National Highway System, there have been a lot, arguably even Reagan with Star Wars. I mean, there have been a lot of times when the economy has been stimulated by significant government spending during times of recession. Where are we at now with that concept of the government as employer of last resort rather than as just giver of the social safety net? Is that even a debate anymore?
I'm not sure that it is. I mean, you have a strain of the Republican Party that runs the House of Representatives just down the hall from us that really believes that the mission of Congress is to eliminate government from every corner of our lives. And we're now arguing over something that we never thought was a debate. I mean, we always agreed that the government at least had the obligation to run good schools and to invest in science, America's competitive edge, and build roads and rails. And now we're even debating that basic function of government, never mind whether government should step in at times of severe economic distress and employ people. It's a really sad time in a lot of ways to be here because we're having new debates that we've never seen before. You know, the fact is that we didn't do enough government stimulus, that we have rail accidents happening at a near record rate in the Northeast because we've allowed for our infrastructure to atrophy, and there are people sitting on the sidelines of the economy that are ready to go to work and rebuild those rail lines that will give them jobs and make everybody who rides them safer. It's a win-win. It, to a lot of us, seems like a pretty easy solution to the travails of someone like Nick who would take one of those jobs. But right now, with the Republicans that run the House of Representatives, they won't even hear the beginnings of that argument.
Yeah, which is very unfortunate. Last week, I walked out of the offices of the studio where we do the show, and there was I don't know if he was homeless or not, but there was a guy standing there on the street who said, would you buy me lunch? Would you buy me a meal? And I didn't know what to say. What's the appropriate response to that? I mean, there's this awful conflict of, I don't want to pay this guy to be here every day. And on the other hand, if this is a genuinely needy person,
yeah.
I mean, how do Americans deal with this?
Listen, I don't want to take too much away from my one-day experience of living the life of someone who's homeless, but I got to talk to a lot of guys who just spend their days down in the New Haven Green. None of them want to be there. There's not a single one of them. that is accepting a handout that becomes a justification to remain homeless. Listen, there are some guys who are homeless and who have drug habits and are using some amount of money that they may collect either through charity or through the government to feed them.
This is the Tom Hartman
Especially
Program.
During these days where these folks are dealing with temperatures that could kill a man or a woman living on the street, it probably all behooves us to lend a little additional helping hand.
Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yes, that previous segment was pre-recorded. I went over to the Capitol building this morning and sat down with Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut. And he had spent a day with a homeless guy a couple days ago, and it was just a fascinating conversation. I wanted to get that on the record, so we played that for you while I'm a little out of breath here, while I ran across the street to buy some cough syrup because I've got this cold. And anyhow, I'm back. But I wanted to play for you. Plus, I wanted to play it. Not just that I needed to get myself some guaifenesin. Which, by the way, it's weird. If you ever have a cold, guaifenesin is this. It's called an expectorant. It breaks up mucus in your chest, and it's actually made out of an herb that comes from the jungles of South America. Interesting. Anyway, as far as I remember, I know it's an herb. In any case, it's natural. The dextromethorphan hydrobromide that they add to it is not natural, but, you know, what can you do? I wanted to play Richard Nixon and Ted Kennedy back-to-back, back to my riff on how, you know, the Republicans are going after Obamacare, not because of any philosophical reason at all, not because they want to do what's best for the country, not because they think people should have health care or health insurance. Rick Perry is going to keep 1 million Texans from getting free Medicaid. 1 million people in Texas who make between $3,700 a year. If you make more than $3,700 a year in Texas, you are, by Rick Perry's standards, too rich to get free Medicare. And if you make less than about $16,000 or $17,000, I think it is, in Texas, you are too poor to qualify for Obamacare with subsidies. This is called the red state donut hole, or the Republican donut hole. And it is fixed by what's called an expansion of Medicare, which is where the federal government says to Rick Perry, here, we'll give you the money to pay for those people who make more than $3,700 and less than $17,000 so that they can get free Medicaid. You can expand your Medicaid program to cover all those. That's over 1 million people in Texas. And Rick Perry says, no, I'm not going to take the money. Which means those people just plain old flat out don't qualify. If they go to the Obamacare website and go shopping for health insurance, now, if you make $18,000 a year, you make enough to qualify for an Obamacare subsidy. So you get Obamacare, get a $350 a month policy, and you get a $320 a month subsidy, and it costs you $10 a month or $30 a month, and you're going, hey, this is pretty cool. But if you only make $15,000 a year, now I might be off on my numbers here by $1,000 or $2,000. I'm doing this from memory, but it's in that neighborhood. If you make just a little bit less than that, then you no longer qualify, then you're making too little to qualify for Obamacare, because Obamacare is supposed to kick in when Medicare stops at 100% of poverty, okay? So, you know, Rick Perry is saying to 1 million people in the state of Texas, essentially, that they can go screw themselves, I shouldn't say it that way, but and my apologies if you took it that way, but that tough luck, basically, is what he's saying to them. Jump off a cliff. And he's betting that those 1 million people, when they realize that they have been screwed, that they've been hurt by this, that they're not able to get this free health care, that those million people are going to blame it on President Obama. Because when they went to the website, they weren't able to get a subsidy. Because the website's not going to tell them, hey, you can't get the subsidy because Rick Perry wouldn't give it to you. If you lived in California, you'd have no problem. So anyhow, here's Richard Nixon and his contrasting vision from Ted Kennedy. First, you're going to hear Nixon, and then you're going to hear Kennedy rebut him. This is 1971 when Nixon first proposed Obamacare.
I am proposing today a new national health strategy. It helps more people pay for care, but it also expands the supply of health services and makes them more efficient. It emphasizes keeping people well, not just making people well. The purpose of this program is simply this. I want America to have the finest health care in the world, and I want every American to be able to have that care when he needs it.
The president's program has announced it today as a national health partnership program. I believe is really a partnership program that will provide billions of dollars to the health insurance companies. It's really a partnership between the administration and the insurance companies. It's not a partnership between the patients and the doctors in this nation.
The administration proposal would provide different plans.
And then Dan Shore goes into his analysis, which you've already heard. So that was the criticism, right? The criticism is the same critique that liberals have made of Obamacare. You know, you're subsidizing the health insurance companies to the tunes of billions of dollars. So it's not like, again, Obamacare was, it's not just Romney care. It was Nixon care. So it's not that the Republicans are opposing this out of Republican ideology or philosophy. Republicans have been pushing this since 1971. That's more than 50. That's 52 years. Republicans are opposing this because they want this president to fail at everything he does, whether it's Middle Eastern policy, whether it's health care, whether it's unemployment, whether it's rebooting the economy, whether it's getting the banks under control. They want him to fail at everything he does, so when he is done, they can say, look at that, it was a failed presidency. Let's build some more monuments to Ronald Reagan. That's what the Republicans are up to.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you just heard Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut, talking about how the Republicans in the House are not even going to talk about, seriously, about extending unemployment benefits. Sad. The good, the bad, and the very, very apodictically ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, EcoWine.com. The good, Toyota. The Japanese automaker announced on Monday that its hydrogen-powered car will go on sale in a year in the United States, 2015, a year earlier than previously expected. The car, which has a test name of FCV, uses a hydrogen fuel battery. Toyota says it can reach 0 to 60 miles per hour in around 10 seconds or less and only requires 3 to 5 minutes to refuel. Global warming is real, and there's a good chance it's worse than most scientists think. We'll need to totally revamp our society if we want to go green before it's too late. Good on Toyota for making it easier for us to do that. The bad. Bill O'Reilly. During Monday night's episode of The Factor, the Fox so-called news pundit hosted a panel discussion on legalizing pot. When one of the panelists, Fox so-called news contributor Juan Williams, pointed out that many people support legalization because they are concerned about the long-term effect arrests can have on drug users, O'Reilly argued that marijuana users don't actually get arrested. Take a look.
But I think that if you start to arrest their children and give them records and put barriers in front of their futures and their careers, I think people say, wait a second, as you said in the previous segment, this is soft drug use. Why are you arresting and giving this kid a record, especially minority kids disproportionately? They're the ones who get
only,
arrested.
Only dealers, Juan. There's no, arrest of users.
No,
they get a ticket, Juan. See, Bill is speaking for white people. Bill is just flat out wrong. According to the FBI, marijuana possession accounted for 42.4% of all drug arrests in 2012. And what's more, over the past 2.5 decades, the percentage of drug arrests that were for marijuana possession has actually risen sharply. Arrests for marijuana possession remain one of the most damaging effects of Nixon's war on drugs. This is especially true for minority communities. Shame on Bill O'Reilly for suggesting otherwise. Unless he was just speaking for white people, in which case... he should say, you know, I'm just speaking for white people here. Because, like, you know, that's sort of like what Colorado has done. You know, $500 an ounce pot, really? You think in poor communities they're going to... Well, that's a whole other rant. Anyhow, and the very, very ugly Peak Charter School. The Colorado Elementary School finds itself embroiled in controversy today over allegations it fired Principal Noelle Roney last year when she criticized the way that school workers treated students who couldn't afford to pay for lunch. When Roney found out that the Peak-to-Peak cafeteria's workers were stamping the hands of students who qualified for free lunch or didn't have money left in their lunch accounts, she told those workers to stop doing it. She told a local paper Sunday, as soon as I saw it happening, I was like, no, this is not okay. Students felt so humiliated, like they had done something wrong. They didn't want to go into the lunchroom anymore. It's unethical and disrespectful. According to Roney, Peak-to-Peak's leadership ended up citing her fight against the stamping policy as an example. Excuse me. This is why you don't drink cough syrup when you're on here. As an example of an insubordinate attitude worthy of termination. Embarrassing students by identifying them as poor is bad enough, but firing someone for sticking up for those students? That's very, very ugly. At least I'm not coughing anymore, right? No, seriously. The wonders of Gaia Fennison and Dexter Metharfin. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Somebody in the chat room says, oh, that stuff is addictive. I said, you know, if it got me high and it was pleasant, maybe, but it, you know, mostly it makes me feel queasy. Dad M13A says, hate to see Tom falling asleep on the air. It doesn't do that to me either. I don't, you know, it's because I'm not drinking a whole bottle. I just take the tablespoon that you're supposed to take. But I hope it's just one of those, you know, it kind of goes away. Last night was a weird night. The way that our boat is heated is twofold. You've got electric heaters, which are kind of backup, and then you've got primary heating system, which is a heat pump, which draws water out of the river, and then, you know, runs it through a heat pump, sucks the heat out of it, and then spits it out the side. Well, you can't do that when it's below zero because the water freezes. And so we were just on electric heat last night. And last night it got down to 7 degrees, and there were 40 and 50 mile an hour winds. And so the boat is banging around like crazy. You hardly walk in the thing. And the wind is blowing through the walls and the windows. It was 39 degrees in our living room, dining room, kitchen. Yes, boats are small spaces. It's all one thing, right? The bedroom, the master stateroom, basically our bedroom. There's a bed in the middle, and you can just kind of walk around the side of it, you know, and then there's cabinets on the side. That actually got fairly warm with a single electric heater, but no place else in the boat could we get it above like 40, 45 degrees as it got colder. And about midnight, we were falling asleep. We had been up, you know, doing email and getting today's show ready, and then we laid in bed and said, let's watch a dumb TV show. So I think we were watching CSI Miami or something on Netflix. And Louise gets an attack of the blind munchies. And I've got all these electric heaters running, right, all around the boat, trying to keep the thing from freezing up. And she goes out in the kitchen and makes toast. Well, when you make toast, when you're pulling 60 amps on, you know, on a 50-amp circuit, everything goes like that. And so then when I started fire rate it back up, I think the circuit breakers get a little weird. And because, you know, everything would run for like an hour and then it would shut down. And so from midnight until 3 a.m., every hour or so, I was getting up and rebooting the circuit breakers. And then still, when I woke up this morning, finally, you know, around 7:30 or 8, after maybe 4 hours of sleep last night, the water pipes in the bilge that are running along the side of the boat, the sides, I mean, it was 7 degrees outside when I woke up this morning. And so although it was 38 degrees in the center of the boat, and it was probably 65 or 70 in our bedroom, in the bilge, under the floor where the motors are and all the stuff and the water pipes, it was frozen. I could see ice on the outside of the water pump. And so we had no water. So I had to run up to the security office. They've got showers and bathrooms there for just these kind of occasions. And so, you know, you put on a trench coat, like some kind of aging flasher, and run up and take a shower and use the facilities and then come back down and then try to reorganize the heat and rebalance the thing. There's two circuits that come in, right? Two 110 circuits, and I can run 50 amps on each one. And we finally got it to the point where at least it wasn't like dying and frozen. And Louise just called a little bit ago and said, everything is thawed out and the water is running except for, and we're on winter water, so it's just the water in the boat. We're not hooked up to city water. So, when it thaws out, I have to refill the tank. But except for the trap in the sink is still frozen in the bathroom. So I suggested she pour some boiling water in there and see what happens. I haven't talked to her. Find her. Is that the sound of the toast? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Let's make some toast.
Oh, brilliant.
So, and this is not to pick on Louise. This sounds like a bad Louise story. It's not meant that way at all. It's just you know, kind of comedy of errors. I was contributing to them too. I had heaters plugged in the wrong place. I had not figured out load balancing. You know that we have basically two buses, and I can pull 50 amps on each bus. And I was pulling 65 amps on one bus and 20 amps on the other. And the toaster was on the one that was going 65 amps. And I'm amazed that that 50 amp breaker hadn't blown, because I've got a little ammeter there and it shows me what it's pulling. You know. So, anyway, this morning we got to figure it out. So hopefully tonight we'll be able to sleep.
Yeah.
So I think, I think that the reason I'm coughing is probably just because it just got so cold and so dry, and I was running around in 7 degree temperature this morning, taking a shower, you know, running down a freezing dock, all that kind of stuff. So, anyhow, that's welcome to my life. This is about half the people in the marina. There's 170 boats in this public marina that we live in. And about half of the people down there actually are living down there through the winter. And we're a pretty tight little community because we all depend on each other. It's like, you know, I got this email the day before yesterday. Well, actually one this morning from one of our neighbors that somebody's cat had escaped. You know, keep an eye out for the cat because, you know, cats get in the water or something like that. They're toast this time of year. And then about an hour later, oh, we found the cat. And then there was another one that said, you know, keep an eye out on your neighbor's electrical outlets because we're all pulling so much current that, you know, if you smell something, you know, say something, right? It's not like the old, you know, look out for the bombs. If you see something, say something. If you smell something, say something, which I guess is the opposite of what you do in high school. No, that is what you do in high school, isn't it? It's the opposite of what you do in polite company. Anyhow, but if you notice that, you know, one of the electrical cables seems to have funny smoke coming out of it, let people know. So and that doesn't even get into they can't pump out the septic systems when it's frozen, so it's a whole new challenge.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Like the old saying is, if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Anyway, we'll be back. Welcome back. Maybe that cough syrup, maybe there is something to that cough syrup. Everybody's going, what the hell is he talking about? I really only drank one tablespoon. Let's see. And I, in fact, they didn't even have the adult strength. I got the Pediacure, the child strength, and I only had one teaspoon of it. So, all right. No, I'm not high. Bobby in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Bobby, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV.
I'm not hearing.
Bobby, can you hear me? You are on the air, Bobby. Okay. Bobby, you need to, I'm going to put you on hold because I'm guessing that you are watching us and you got to listen to your phone. Bill in Sequim, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Bill, what's up? Bill is not there either. I hear Bill. Okay. I think that we just have an epidemic of people not listening to their phones. Try Bobby again. Okay. We'll do that. Bobby in Fort Worth, you're there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. How are you doing today?
I'm just great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I want to thank you. I'm a longtime Texan, over 55, and you spelled out Governor Perry as best as anybody can. People need to know about our governor, what he is doing, or lack of, rather, and how we need to change our red state. Wendy Davis is coming up for election in 2014. We need a change. A good one.
Yeah.
Someone that can help us turn this state around and give us what we so much need. Because we, if we don't donate to Perry or you don't have money, you're nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what Wendy Davis is going to do is she's going to put the dignity back in the W.
Well, I know she's been a very good senator.
As in George W. kind of screwed up the letter W, and Wendy with a W in Wendy will make us all proud of W's again. I'm sorry. It's an erudite. It's a weird joke. Anyway. Yeah. So are you going to work on Wendy's campaign, Bobby? Are you going to show up?
Well, I would like to.
Phone
I
call
can't
for
do
her.
Much, but I would help her. I plan on finding out if she needs some help, but we need a Democrat.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. When she did that filibuster, I went online and I sent a donation to her. I've been getting her emails ever since, which is the downside of making donations, I suppose. But I've been keeping up to date on what's going on. So.
Sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
What did you say? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said when she did her filibuster on the floor of the Senate on that abortion bill,
right.
I went online and I made a donation to Wendy Davis's campaign. And I think people all over the country did because, you know, all of a sudden everybody started taking her very seriously. And I've been getting emails from her campaign ever since. And it's just great to see how they're organizing. They're getting active. Texas needs not just a Democrat, but a woman.
Right. Well, Governor Perry has made access to health care for all kinds of reasons in women's clinics using the abortion as an excuse when those clinics do cancer screening and all kinds of other things.
Oh, I know. It is a male Republican war on women, Bobby. It absolutely is. Bobby, thanks a lot for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV there in Austin, in Fort Worth, Texas. And thank you for calling in. We'll be right back. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you, and let's check in on the news of the day with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, giving a gift of a goat to a returning slave in South Sudan. Bob Ney is on the line, former member of the United States House of Representatives and author of the book Sideswiped, as well as being a reporter for the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Bob.
Hello. How are you, Tom?
Great to have you back with us. So what's going on in the world?
Well, a few things. Today is basically income gap key issue day, and I think it's going to move into most of the year. Yeah, it started off, of course, with the Senate passing the extension of the unemployment provisions, and then the president, because they thought maybe it wouldn't happen. You know, they weren't getting enough votes at first. And then the president has made a pretty, you know, firm statement. Something has to happen in the House, and, of course, the House wants to, quote, pay for it. but I think that they will move on it. I don't imagine they can put this under. The next stage is going to be Senator Reid, the leader of the Senate, is going to really hit hard about a livable wage. They call it minimum wage, but some type of livable wage. And that debate is going to really rage for months and months. And then on top of it, the president had an anti-poverty, basically, announcement today at the White House, and has come up with a couple of provisions, one trying to restore some neighborhoods and give some tax breaks for those who create jobs. And the Democratic and Republican side, Tom, are getting just inching closer and closer to some type of budget. So a lot of economic news today.
Bob, I've the rumor mill here in Washington, D.C., and correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably better tuned into it than I am, but what I've heard is that there's actually serious discussion in the Democratic caucus about eliminating the filibuster, not just for judicial nominees and executive nominees, but for legislation as well. And the theory being that if they do that right away, then in the first 4 or 5 months of this year, they can get some really good legislation in place that will bring back the economy, that will bring back jobs, that will put some, you know, spit and polish, some shine on the Democratic Party, on this administration, on the economy, and you know, make things work again, and that they're not so worried about Republicans taking the House and Senate and then, you know, having revenge of keeping it that way, because they're coming to the conclusion that if the Republicans took the Senate, they would do away with the filibuster anyway. What do you think on that, A? And B, if that's true, if that rumor that I'm hearing is true, might that be why Republicans are all of a sudden starting to go along with things to prevent that from happening?
Well, I think that's true. They, you know, because they were in filibuster madness for a while. I mean, that was the rage of the town.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they have backed off because conversations within the Democratic side obviously leaked to the Republican side. And I think that's accurate that they have a little bit of a worry about highlighting, you know, filibusters at this point in time. And also possibly the Democratic side could take the bold step at some point in time and get rid of the cloture rule. You know, you must have the 60 vote.
Right.
And
right.
They would be doing everybody a favor with that. So, I think it's absolute possibility, and they are in discussions over it.
All right. Okay. What else
it
is up?
It would be healthy.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. By the way, you used to live in the houseboat that was right behind our boat down in the marina here, the public
That's
marina
right.
here in D.C. Last night, our pipes froze.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
Cold weather.
Louise has everything pretty much thawed out now. But
those are floating ice cubes. When
yes.
It's that cold.
Yeah, they are. So what else is going on in the world?
Well, I wanted to mention Janet Fellen because, you know, she's yelling, I mean, because she has been, you know, cleared as, which I thought she would, everybody thought she would, as head of the Fed Reserve. She wasn't maybe the progressive choice, but she was surely better than Larry Summers, who was a choice out there for a while, the darling of Wall Street, as they called him. And I think that she's going to tackle some tough issues and may actually surprise people on being fairly, you know, I think up to standards to actually make some changes.
I think so, too.
Bank, getting foreign bank issues.
Yeah, she has a good reputation, and she has a better resume than I think probably anybody who's ever been chairman of the Fed.
And then the one other thing is, you know, Iraq is a complete nightmare. And also President Karzai is saying to our president, President Obama, well, you know, if you want to stay and have some troops here, then you have to meet some conditions that we want to set. So really, I think that the governments of both Iraq and Afghanistan are living in, I don't know, some type of sort of unreal world. But it's very, very bad right now with the insurgents in Iraq. And there's really nothing much we can do of troops on the ground, but the president is willing to send some type of military assistance.
Yeah, which seems to me like, you know, it being half pregnant. I mean, you either do it or you don't. You don't keep alive an administration that if its own people had their own way, wouldn't be there. It seems to me like a dangerous policy. On the other hand, I mean, you know, George Bush broke this region so badly. I mean, just broke it so badly that you know, it's like Humpty Dumpty. I mean, I don't think anybody can put it back together again. I think it's going to have it's going to take a terrible war and a terrible period of stress and distress before that region sorts itself out.
And people have to remember Rumsfeld himself under George Bush, our secretary under George Bush, is the one who dismantled the entire Iraqi police and military. He knew it was a mistake at that time. He did it anyway. And I think history has come back to, you know, hurt because they never really could put it back together. And because you use the Humpty Dumpty, and it's really correct. They had a terrible error in the beginning anyway in Iraq through Rumsfeld's act.
I had forgotten that. That's right. He purged all the Baathists. And in order to be a member of the, you know, anything other than just a grunt carrying a rifle, you had to be a member of the Baathist Party.
That's right.
And he dumped all the Baathists out of the Iraqi government. And in the process, took out everybody who had any competence whatsoever.
Well, he took away their paychecks, they kept their guns, and he did away with them.
Yeah, and now they're using their guns.
Their guns, yes.
Crazy stuff. It's like the George W. Bush administration is going to echo for generations, the damage that this man did. Bob Ney, former Congressman Bob Ney, author of Sideswipe, the book you have to read if you want to know what's going on here in Washington, D.C., particularly about the crimes of John Boehner. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Good talking to you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. And Ryan Fisher on the line with us, host of Focal Point Radio Show on AFR, the American Family Association's radio show, AFR Talk, Director of Issues and Analysis for Government and Public Policy with the American Family Association. That's AFA.net is their website. Ryan, welcome back to the program.
I'm good to be back with you.
Thank you. I understand that you are writing, saying, and ranting on the radio, and I say that in the best possible way. I rant on the radio, too, that people who believe in evolution should not be elected to public office in the United States. Can you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. Thomas Jefferson said, our rights come to us from a creator God. We should only have people in public office that agree with him.
That agree with whom?
With Thomas Jefferson.
Okay, and Thomas Jefferson said that he was, you know, quite concerned about the priests. I mean, you know, had I known you were going to bring him up, I'd have the quote right here in front of me. I'd read it to you, but I mean, Jefferson was outspokenly opposed to the religious people of his day.
Well, he was not outspokenly opposed to the concept of a creator with a capital C, who is the source of all, every single one of our human and fundamental civil rights.
In every country, in every age, the priest has been hostile to liberty. Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson also said that there is a creator, and our rights are unalienable because they come to us as a gift from the creator, and the purpose of government is to protect the rights that come to us not from government, but come to us from God. We ought to have political figures, statesmen, who agree with him and understand the proper role of government and who believe in a creator who is the source of all of our rights.
You realize that it was Thomas Jefferson who wrote the Jefferson Bible, where he took out all of Jesus's miracles. You know that, Brian. It's still in print.
And I realize also that Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence that says there is a creator, that we are created beings, not evolved beings, and that our unalienable rights come to us as a gift from that creator with a capital C. I also understand that Thomas Jefferson wrote that.
This is remarkable that we're doing dueling Jefferson quotes here. Let me just find this here. Here it is. He was talking about, he says, rats, a little patience, he said, and we shall see the reign of witches, their spells dissolved. He was talking about John Adams, actually, in that time.
Mm-hmm.
You
got to understand, part of Jefferson's objections to the clergy is they opposed his run for political office. They were his political adversaries, and he said nasty things about his political adversaries.
Well, no, it's more than that. Here, I've finally found the quote. You know, the famous quote that's around the top of the Jefferson Memorial is, I have sworn forever, I've sworn on the altar of Almighty God. Hang on just a second here. Here it is.
Eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
There you go. Okay, so let me read you the letter from which that quote came, okay?
That's fine.
This is a letter that he wrote to Ben Rush 3 months before he was elected president in 1800, and he started out by asking Ben Rush not to make the letter public. He said, Dear Ben, I promised you a letter on Christianity, which I have not forgotten. I do not know that it would reconcile the genus Irritabile Vetum, which is Latin for the angry priests, who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on two interesting grounds to be softened. The delusion on the clause of the Constitution, he's talking here about the First Amendment, which guarantees freedom of religion. The delusion on the clause of the Constitution, which, while it secured the freedom of the press, covered also the freedom of religion, has given to this clergy a very favorable hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity throughout the United States. And as every sect believes its own form to be the true one, everyone perhaps hoped for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and the Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country by my election as president threatens abortion to their hopes, and they, the preachers, believe that any portion of power confided to me, such as being elected president, will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe rightly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. But this is all they have to fear from me, and enough, too, in their opinion. So there's Jefferson saying, you know, the tyranny over the mind of man that he has sworn eternal hostility to is Christianity.
No, it's his political opponents.
No.
You just proved my point that his opposition, his anger was directed at clergy, specifically clergy who opposed his election to office. So you just proved my point, and he was also the one that wrote the phrase, Almighty God, I have sworn upon the altar of Almighty God.
I know, I just read it to you.
Thomas Jefferson, Tom. So you just proved my point, both of them.
Okay. This is, I find this very interesting. So what are we, so you're saying, Brian, that we should only allow Christians to become, I'm going to stop debating to Jefferson here with you, let people look up their own Jefferson quotes. That only Christians should be allowed to run for political office. Why not Pastafarians? There was a guy who was just sworn in as a city council member last week with a strainer on his head, a believer in the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and a good man. This is a church that has some fairly reasonable doctrines. You can look it up. Why not Pastafarians?
Well, the problem is that our civil rights will not be safe in the hands of anyone who does not understand, along with Thomas Jefferson, that these rights come to us from Almighty God, and therefore they must not be tampered with by the political hands.
But see, the Pastafarians know who that Almighty God is. it's the noodly spaghetti, flying spaghetti monster with his noodly appendages, and the Muslims know who the Almighty God is. It's Allah, and the Hindus know who that Almighty God is. And I mean, you know, everybody's got their own notion of who that Almighty God is. Are you telling me that we should only allow people to be elected who believe in your Almighty God?
No, I'm not talking about passing some kind of a law prohibiting people from running from office. I'm not talking about that, Tom. I'm just talking about my counsel to the American people. Do not elect somebody to office who believes that God is the flying spaghetti monster, because if you do, your civil rights will not be safe.
And yet Christians will protect your civil rights because they, what, want to force you to carry a baby to term, even if you're raped, because they, what, I don't get it.
Well, abortion is a prime example of what we're talking about, Tom, because the first of the unalienable rights that Thomas Jefferson spoke of was the right to life. That right has been denied to 56
right.
million unborn children.
So if a, so, okay, it is going to turn into an abortion debate. This is, yeah, please don't go there. I guess I'm just astounded, Brian. I'm just astounded that the secular democracy or democratic republic, the secular republic that Jefferson helped create, Jefferson who was so skeptical of religion, Jefferson who took a razor blade and cut all the miracles out of the Bible because he didn't believe in a miraculous God, that, you know, he would use that rhetorical flourish, that you would promote that. But,
well, now, Tom, you're the one that has the problem. You look at the Jefferson Memorial. Every quote in the Jefferson Memorial refers to God with a capital G. The problem here, Tom, is not with me. It's with you. You have a very skewed understanding of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, I've spent a fair amount of time at the Jefferson Memorial. I think that, like the letter I just read you, you should take those quotes in context. Brian Fisher, AFA.net is the website. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Host of the Focal Point Radio Show on AFR Talk. Brian, thanks for dropping by.
All right, Tom, you bet.
Talk to you later. It's incredible. I need to have my Thomas Jefferson quotes at all times. I didn't know. You'd think I would have memorized them by now. Anyway, Dennis in Spokane, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV system. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Well, I thought of a couple more subjects here while I've been listening to you. That last guy was quite something.
Well, he represents a large sector of the American electorate, you know, and that's something we all need to know about and be very thoughtful about.
Well, that life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness kind of says we can vote for who we want to.
You would think.
I would think so. Hey, thanks for bringing on board Stephanie Miller.
Oh, it's
missing her on TV, and I'll be watching her every day.
Yeah, your thanks are officially passed along to the folks at Free Speech TV. I have no say in how they program or run their network. They just happen to carry my show. I'm glad that you found her show in the morning. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, and I'm looking forward to it.
She's great.
Yeah.
I might register a complaint that the network, Free Speech TV, I have to turn the volume up on my TV twice that of any other channel, so you might pass that on to your...
Is that all day long, or is that just during particular shows?
It's every show.
Hmm. And which network? You're listening on DirecTV?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will I'll make a note of that and pass it along. And if anybody else is listening on DirecTV...
2016. Wow, what a wonderful work.
Pardon?
I haven't studied economics, but I've felt strongly about the points you've delivered, and now I have something to throw at people. I do wish you would have included a CD of the text of the book, so I can quote you directly without having to guess. I got the audio
version. Yeah, you can get the online version and put it on your iPhone or something, or your smartphone or whatever.
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah. It's
okay.
You know, they got a Kindle version.
Of that. version. Now, for all the talk we've heard about raising the minimum wage and spurring the local economy, help me out on this one, because most everybody on minimum wage is getting housing and food assistance.
Not so most everybody, but probably a good percentage of them.
Merely that increase in wage disqualifies them from government assistance, so it doesn't really increase the money in the community. It does not just, well, the money stops coming from government coffers and starts coming from the private sector.
And that seems like a good thing.
I have no complaint with that. It's just that I don't understand how we're putting really more money into local economies, because that money really is being used for the same thing. It's just coming from a different place.
Well, it depends. First of all, it depends on the state, because different states have different standards for different types of things that people qualify for, and things like health insurance and stuff like that. I mean, that's way above even where they're talking about raising the minimum wage to. But yes, you're right. But it's a good thing. This should be the Democrats' argument to the Republicans. You want to cut government spending? Fine. Let's cut out some housing spending. Let's cut out some food stamp spending. We'll do it by raising the minimum wage. They have these people make enough money that they no longer qualify for these things. And that's a great argument, guys. Thanks for calling and sharing that with me. I'll have to use that on the 20 minutes past the hour. Children's strength cough syrup doesn't make it. Anyway, welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. we just had a caller who made an interesting point, and I want to extend that point. He said, if you raise the minimum wage, there are people who make minimum wage generally also qualify for food stamps and housing assistance, and maybe heating assistance in the winter, or other kinds of help. You raise the minimum wage, they no longer qualify for those things. But they're making more money, but, because they no longer qualify for those things, there's, basically the same amount of money is coming into the community, so it's not an economic stimulus, but it's less government spending, and now the corporations are paying the cost of the employees rather than you and me. So why don't the Democrats use this? Now, I know down there at the White House that you guys monitor the show. And I know there are a few Democrats and a few people affiliated with the Democratic Party who listen regularly to this program. And so let me whisper a tip to you. Tell the Republicans that if they want to cut government spending in order to pay for the extension of unemployment benefits, that you're willing to do that, and the way you will accomplish that is by raising the minimum wage high enough that, let's say you want to cut government spending by $1 billion nationwide. So you raise the minimum wage high enough, whatever it is. I don't know, it might be 20 cents, it might be a buck and a half. Somebody's got to do the math on this. But you raise the minimum wage high enough that now $1 billion worth of food stamps no longer has to be passed out because those people just don't qualify for it anymore. I mean, isn't that pretty straightforward? This is sort of a variation on the Rick Perry doesn't want you to have your own money, your own tax money. You send the tax money off to Washington, D.C., and Rick Perry doesn't want you to have it back. 1 million Texans are not going to qualify for free Medicare, which is federal tax money coming back to Texas. He doesn't want that money coming back into Texas. So it won't be stimulating the Texas economy. It won't be going to doctors and hospitals in Texas, and it won't be going to clinics and pharmacies in Texas. But beyond that, the people who are sick in Texas are not going to get better. Anyway, it's all very strange. Howard in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Howard, what's up?
Hey, Tom, couple quickies and then something serious. I know the queasy feeling you're getting from your medicine because I get it when I talk to Republicans.
Okay.
And I suggested if Obama passed gas, Daryl Issa would hold a hearing on it.
I think so. Yeah.
And also in Texas, being that you're talking about it, they're considering a law now that if you're impregnated in anything but the missionary position, you get a $500 fine. But that's something
else. Wait a minute, you're making that up.
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. You know, what's so weird is that I had to double check.
Now, something that's really, really relevant. This is something that I've been preaching for a while. And that's the fact that a candidates should run for the Democratic Party without taking any money from corporations. And that should be their platform. And this lady in Washington just did it.
Which lady in Washington? You're talking about the woman who just won the city council seat as a socialist?
Yes.
Right.
Forget the title socialist, so to speak. I have no problem with that. But the fact that she ran without taking corporate money, this is what has to be done to turn this country around.
Yeah.
People have to run that are unobligated to corporations, and that's how you do it, and that's how we'll eventually get government-financed elections.
That's only half of it, though. You've got the corporate money, and, you know, clearly, you know, companies like Monsanto have an agenda. They don't want GMO foods labeled, for example, or the oil companies have an agenda. You know, they want to be able to dump more poison in the air. But you've also got the billionaires and the multimillionaires, and they have an agenda, too, in addition to lower taxes and you know, more ways to shelter their estates and ways to increase their political power. And sometimes those agendas are very strange. You know, Shelley Adelson has an agenda that not necessarily strange, but, you know, that aren't corporate, let's say. Shelley Adelson's agenda has an awful lot to do with Israel. You've got the Koch brothers' agenda has to do with libertarian politics, you know, trying to create a libertarian place in the United States to prove that Ayn Rand was right, that some of this stuff will actually work. And so it's really money. It's not just corporate money. It's really money corrupting politics that is a problem in this country.
Well, I'm using corporate as generic, so to speak, money from the wrong sources.
Okay. Well, here's how we do that is, you know, the Supreme Court, going back in the recent era since the Buckley versus Vallejo decision in the, I think it was the late 70s or early 80s, the Supreme Court has asserted that money is protected under the First Amendment. And it's among the most protected things by the Constitution because it is free speech. And the most protected of free speech is political speech, and money is political speech. And if we were to blow up that principle, which has never been put into law by any legislator or signed into law by any president, but it has been created and put into law by the Supreme Court in a way that is completely unconstitutional, in my opinion. If we were to blow that up by amending the Constitution to simply say money is not protected by the First Amendment, it is property, it is not speech, that would put an end to both the corporate and the billionaire money being able to influence politics. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's why I think MoveToAmend.org is one of the most important organizations in America. So, say what? Oh, a book for him. Okay. Howard, you are. Shano says that he wants you to receive a book today. What book are we giving away today? The Crash of 2016. Holy cow, we must have got a case of mint. Howard, would you like a copy?
Oh, I would love it, Tom.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to put you on hold here, and Danielle will get your number. He is on line 4, Danielle. And we will be right back. It's 28 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Should we have an anti-religious test for running for government? Occupying the media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Happy New Year, Tom.
Happy New Year to you, Paul. What's on your mind? You want to talk about Boeing? Boeing?
Yeah, sure, that, or I don't know, there's so many topics I was going to say, pick A, B, or C. Corporate extortion.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
It's exactly what it is. And, you know, here's what I wanted to ask you about. We've talked about this with Senator Bernie Sanders, who's, of course, said that, you know, Boeing, this is for people who don't know, the state of Washington gave Boeing an $8.7 $1 billion tax benefit package, which is the highest given to any corporation in history. $8.7 billion. At the same time, Boeing was putting the squeeze on the union for a contract continuation and shopping more state benefits around to various states.
Right, and the governor of Missouri raised $1.7 billion from his legislature to offer it to Boeing to bring one of their production facilities to Missouri, for
right.
example.
Correct. And so this is what occurs to me, a couple things here, is that given that Boeing you know, has a presence in at least five states that I know of, maybe more, and it need not have presence in more than one state, too, but it certainly is subject to interstate commerce regulation by the United States Congress. And as Senator Sanders has suggested, that states who are willing to undercut other states with tax benefits and so on ought to lose their federal highway funds, and rationale being that if you don't need to collect taxes from the corporations that are in your state, maybe you have enough money that you don't need federal money.
Right. I agree.
I mean, That's one way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is here is that the Constitution does not allow that a state can charge duty or put economic sanctions on another state. And this is sort of what's happening. And the reason being that it was in the news here that if Boeing were to leave the state of Washington, or at least for this project, that you know we stood to lose have our credit rating downgraded. That's serious. So what they're doing is they're playing. They are the corporation is having an effect on interstate commerce here, and they're outside the loop. They're not being regulated.
So some citizen of Washington, maybe somebody named Paul, whose livelihood would be affected by the state's credit rating being downgraded, might have standing to bring a case before the Supreme Court based on this.
It's possible. We certainly don't have a Congress at this point that's willing to place any regulations on these corporations.
No.
An easy solution, maybe easier than Senator Sanders suggests, is that the $8.7 billion that the state of Washington has foregone in taxes for Boeing might just be put on their federal tax bill so that there's no advantage to going from state to state. And here's the other thing, is that By one state playing it, see, there's two things going on here. Not only did they want the state to cut them a big tax benefit, but they also wanted the union to take a cut. So,
right.
But by shopping it around to another states for other benefits and free port advantages and so on, they're actually pitting other state governments against workers here.
That's right.
You see what I'm doing? So that's not even a fair fight.
No, it's not.
They're not even pitting workers against workers in other states.
Yeah.
They're pitting a state government against workers.
Right.
Which is just not. See, this is outrageous.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. And I think something should be done about it. And I think it's mind-boggling that our Congress sees not, you know, it does not see it as a crisis. Although, you know, truth be told, more than half the states, or roughly half the states, are right to work for less states. They're the red states, the taker states.
That's slave states, yeah.
And they want to take from the maker states the makers, the manufacturing jobs.
Well,
and
it's the same thing, that we've been talking about with the government subsidizing Walmarts and so on. I'll move quick here. I have a suggestion for the minimum wage. That's the corporations that have presence in multiple states have to pay the minimum wage. It's the highest minimum wage existing in a state that for which they have a presence. For instance, if McDonald's has a presence here in Washington State, they have to pay $9.32 an hour to every state, every worker in every state.
Right.
That way, if they don't like that, they can get out of Washington State, and guess what would happen? It would open up the burger business for local people.
I don't think that you could stretch the Commerce Clause quite that far, and I think you'd run up against a Tenth Amendment problem with that. But I do think that the idea of somebody, a resident of the state of Washington, claiming that they would be harmed, and you know, probably it would be better if it was a Boeing worker, but maybe not. Maybe a vendor who sells to Boeing, you know, or something like that. But somebody in the state of Washington, or even somebody who simply does business in Washington and has a line of credit, and you know, saying that, that their business will be harmed by Boeing in Missouri engaging in this dance to, designed to screw Washington State and the workers, you know, the Washington State workers, is wrong, is a violation of the how did you paraphrase that construction that states can't place, it's not tariffs on each other, it's,
well, it, you can't charge duty or place economic sanctions on on another state. You can't go to economic war with another state.
Right.
And that's kind of what's going on. Here's the other thing. Would Missouri or South Carolina get a corresponding upgrade in credit for ours, for our, ours being lost?
I mean, of course they would.
Is going, you see what
of
I mean?
Of course they would. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's playing economic war with other states.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I think there's now this court. I don't have a whole lot of confidence that this court would do anything with that.
Yeah. Yep.
But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be started going through the courts. It's entirely possible that the nature of the Supreme Court will change over the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, so, we the people can start thinking about these things because we the people are going to be the ones to have to do something about it.
There you go. Well said, Paul. Thanks a lot for the call. Very well said. Steve in Phoenix. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Tom. Looks like you might need a really nice hot toddy with some an extra liberal dose of brandy and rum to combat your
Yes. Stuff. Thank you.
You betcha.
I actually, when I ran across the street to buy my cough syrup, I also bought a bottle of red wine to split with Louise for dinner tonight. So.
Oh, hey, that's always good.
I'm thinking ahead of you.
It sounds great. Hey, the other thing is your guy Mitch McTurtle here and his pals, you know, he's wanting some offsets. Well, he's had 33 years of offsets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tax, you know, top marginal tax rate of 39.70. So that's something we can tell these people. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to tell you here is, you know, I live in this age-restricted community, you know, on the outskirts of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Canadians that have some, you know, snowbirds, they call them.
Right.
And they got their winter home down here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the last, oh gosh, 6-7 years, I've spoken to about 35 of them. And, you know, I asked them, you know, and they're all different provinces throughout Canada.
Right.
You know, I asked them, tell me about your health care. You know, they like it and all that. And I'm up to 35 people now, and every one of them seems to be quite happy with it. And, in fact, one day I was up at the community hot tub sitting in there, and in walks this one gal about 30, and she happens to be a granddaughter of one of the residents, and she's an oncologist nurse up there. And I, you know, found out, I asked her about it too. And she says virtually the same stuff. And she says, if you're diagnosed with lung cancer on Tuesday, you'll be in for chemo on Thursday.
Right.
But she says, if you need a knee or a hip, you might have to wait a little bit longer.
Right.
So it doesn't sound too bad to me, Tom.
No, it doesn't sound too bad to me either. And by the way, if you need a knee or a hip here in the United States, unless you're going to pay for it out of pocket, you're going to have to wait a while too. So
exactly.
I have a couple of friends who've been through both. So, yeah, I'm with you. Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma. You want to talk about Brian Fisher?
That guy, he says that we should only have Christians elected to office.
Right.
I really don't want a Congress that's made up of only white Christian men making laws for everybody else.
Well, that was, you know, one of the questions I should have asked him is, how do you know? I mean, do we go into their bank accounts and look for tithing? Do we investigate their past and find out if they've ever run around on their wives or their husbands? How do you tell? Is it just a simple declaration? I don't think so.
Well, excuse me, but is there a single religion on this planet, organized religion, that does not teach women to obey and shut up and sit down?
Yeah, you're right. Well, that would be one of the ways you know, is do you believe in patriarchy and hierarchy? And if the answer is yes, then you're a Christian and you qualify to run for government in the United States. And that's what's so screwed up about our government is we only have 16% female elected officials.
Yes, well, if we had more women and more minorities in Congress,
my point,
we would not have as many wars or as much of a military machine or as much corruption, because we really don't like to put up with it.
Or as many rich white billionaires skimming money off the top and taking corporate welfare.
Yeah. Did you read the report from the USDA? You can now have Agent Orange sprayed on your fields?
Yeah. Yeah, they're just, they just two D four or something like that. The active ingredient in Agent Orange has just been approved as a pesticide, or an herbicide, rather. Yeah, wonderful stuff. Norma, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Seriously. I guess they think they figured out how to get the dioxin out of it or something. Agent Orange, coming to a store near you. Shane says, Agent Orange, John Boehner's nickname, right? Sherry in Bradley, California. Hey, Sherry, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hi,
on
how you doing?
System. Great. What's up?
I just wanted to comment on you know, it's not that easy to get food stamps. Here, I live in California, and if you haven't worked, I don't know exactly, I'm not on food stamps, but I know if you haven't worked in the last, I'm guessing, month or 2 months, they don't give you food stamps. You have to have worked recently to get food stamps.
I'm not sure that that's one of the criteria, but I know that it is a pretty rigorous process, applying for food stamps and getting food stamps.
I wanted to say that why don't they, if they need some money, apparently the Pentagon lost $600 billion.
Recently. They've lost $2 trillion total that they can't account for, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to say, why don't they cut all the money, if they need some money, cut all the money, I don't know the exact amount, that goes to these oil companies?
Yes, $3 billion a year, and that's just the money that we hand them in cash. Why don't we start charging them taxes and, why, you know, do away with some of these other things, oil depletion allowances? Why don't we have them pay for the cancers that they cause? Why don't we start capturing their externalities?
Exactly, Sherry. And also I believe it's Michelle Bachmann who gets subsidies for, I believe she has cattle.
Yes, she.
I don't know if she has cattle.
She gets money under the farm bill.
Yes, I know she has pigs, which are horrifically treated, unethical. If you listen to Gandhi, Gandhi would say the way to judge a nation, morality, is the way it treats its animals.
Hmm.
And so her running around saying everybody's socialist.
Yeah. Well, I think the good news is that Michelle Bachmann was about to go to prison for crimes that had to do with the handling of her campaign funds. And apparently the deal that she cut was that she would no longer run for Congress. So she's leaving at the end of this year.
Well, she's leaving, but she's still torturing pigs.
Right, and taking farm bill dollars for it, yeah.
And the Christian guy, this country was basically stolen from the American Indians. I don't know what he's talking about.
That's a good
point. They were much more moral, controlled their population, took care of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on and on.
Yeah.
They were much, I can't come up with the word. I have a neurological disorder because I was living on land on a military base where they dumped carbon tetrachloride
for
12 years.
Carbon tet is awful stuff. Smells like bananas, but it's, it smells wonderful, but it's nasty, nasty stuff. Sherry, thank you for the call. I'm sorry to hear about that. But I think all of your suggestions as ways to cut subsidies in order to pay for the minimum wage are brilliant. And thank you for calling and making. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Talk Radio
for the sane among us. Tom Hartman here with you, and Fred in Harwood Heights, Illinois. Hey, Fred, what's on your mind today? You want to talk about Thomas Jefferson?
Pardon?
Thomas Jefferson?
Two quick comments. One is the Constitution says that there's no religious test shall be a requirement for holding office, so you can see what our forefathers thought about any religion in politics. The second, pretty sure I remember reading somewhere that, like in Germany, minimum wage is something equivalent to 23 American dollars. You can check it out.
Yeah.
I think I was reading that in a financial.
Yeah, the minimum wage is substantially higher in all of those those countries.
And I got friends that come from Germany. They don't allow them to ship jobs out of the country wholesale.
Yeah.
Like they do in this country. That's the real problem.
No, they don't. They use value-added taxes, VAT taxes, and they use regulations as ways of locking them down. Excellent point, Fred. Thank you for calling and making it. This is February 10th, 1814, letter by Thomas Jefferson to Dr. Thomas Cooper, addressing the question directly, are the Ten Commandments part of Christianity? Is Christianity part of British law, out of which came American law? He says, and I quote, "Finally, in answer to Fortescue Allen's question why the Ten Commandments should not now be a part of the common law of England, we can say that they are not because they never were. Anybody asserting that the Ten Commandments are the basis of American or British law is mistakenly believing a document that was a manifest forgery. Sir Matthew Hale," Jefferson wrote, "lays it down in these words, Christianity is parcel of the laws of England, but it can't be. Christianity wasn't introduced till the 7th century, the conversion of the first Christian king of the Heptarchy taking place around the year 598 and that of the last around 686. Here, then, was a space of 200 years during which the common law of England was in existence and Christianity no part of it. We might as well say that the Newtonian system of philosophy is a part of the common law as that the Christian religion is. In truth, the alliance between church and state in England has ever made their judges accomplices in the frauds of the clergy, and even bolder than they are." So, and he goes on. I could give you a whole long list. If you Google Tom Hartman, Judge Moore, Thomas Jefferson, it'll all pop right up for you. Anyhow, Alan in Johnson City, Tennessee. I've been to Johnson City. I gave a talk there once. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Okay. I am pro Obamacare, and I've done work for the local Democratic Resource Center. Mm-hmm. So, as far as the health care, mm-hmm. pre-Obamacare, when people had to buy insurance, and still do, out of their own pocket, if you took the money, let's say it was $250 a month extra that they paid for private care that they couldn't get through a group insurance, at 7.5% interest in a stock dividend company, or 7.25 interest. After 30 years, that would be about $320,000 in personal wealth. Are you there, sir?
I am. I'm trying to figure out where you're going and trying to do this math in my head at the same time. It's not making sense to me. What's your point?
Well, that money that is spent on insurance instead of it being accumulated by the individual would be $320,000 after 30 years.
Right.
And usually that's about age 55.
Right.
When people start spending, say, the dividend at 5%, you spend the dividend at $16,000 a year. That gives $2,400 a year in taxes and $13,620.
You know, all this makes sense to me, Alan, if you're talking about retirement or annuities, but it doesn't.
No,
I don't see where this fits in with health insurance. I mean, what happens if you got sick during that period of time?
No, that's what I'm saying is, okay, if you work at a large company A, you buy health insurance. It's $100.
Right.
But if I have to buy, because I don't work there, and I have to buy single insurance, I have to spend $450.
Right.
It's incredibly expensive to buy insurance by yourself.
Yeah.
Prior to Obamacare.
Prior to Obamacare. You're absolutely right. In fact, I've been there.
All that money.
Been there, yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
All that money, that income stream that's paid out, instead of accumulated by the individuals. That's what I'm talking about. And it's very insidious because most liberals know nothing of finance. So like I say, they would accumulate about $320,000 over the course of 30 years if they were allowed to keep the money. That would also give them spending at probably age 55, which is usually used to be the case, of about $16,000, $13,000 after taxes.
Right.
And since it would affect about 3,300 people for every 100,000, that's $45 million gone out of the local economy per year. That's already happened. Remember Reagan? So this has been going on for 30 years. About 10 million people are affected. And nationwide, the money that's gone out of the economy is about $106,236,000,000 per year. Gone.
Going to where?
It's gone. People are never allowed to build the income. Remember how you talk about the African-American family and how their wealth of the entire family is only like $1,800?
Yeah, actually, it's around $5,000 and $81,000 for white families. But that was before 2008. Right. That was before the crash. I don't know what the numbers are now.
Yeah. Well, here's what this does. Having to buy your own health insurance prevents people from building wealth.
Okay, so this is an argument for us to go with one of the European systems where health insurance is just basically free and it's paid for out of tax dollars. Is that the point you're making?
No, this is the most important argument you've heard since you started the show.
Okay. Alan, we're flat out of time. You're going to have to call again and try to explain it to me. Coming up tomorrow, most of us agree we need to increase the minimum wage. Now, here's a new twist. Some conservatives want to vary the wage by the age of the worker. I'll confront conservative financial advisor Peter Schiff on that. That and all the news and information you won't get from corporate-owned news media. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Tag. You're it. Get out there and occupy some.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.